Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising you with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we are jam-packed with new UFC information on today's episode, episode 103. Of course, UFC Denver went down this past weekend. I was able to catch a couple of the fights. I was hanging out with my girlfriend, hanging out with my friends. So, you know, I was kind of like, this card's kind of mediocre. We'll kind of skip out on it, so we caught a couple fights here and there. But even by the last two fights of the night, I was like, I'm going to bed. Like, I really, like, can't stay up for UFC main event and co-main event. They were so boring. I just couldn't bring myself to do it. We'll be recapping the entire card to end this episode. Also on today's episode, we'll be looking at some new fights that have been announced since 7-11, July 11th. As well, of course, looking at disgusting film. I was going to talk about this new book I read, Baby Steps Millionaires by Dave Ramsey, but I forgot all my notes at work, so that will have to be saved for Thursday's episode. As well, we'll be recapping The Boys episode 7 as season 4 winds to an end. We're also going to be looking at my updated yearly rankings for a couple things, event-wise, you could say, for the UFC. And we'll be introducing a new segment involving a Verdict MMA community. That's right. We're going to be asking the community every week some questions, then we'll be talking about it on here. And as well, we might even mention a bit about the whole Trump situation. We'll have to see. It is, of course, the Surprise Jab Podcast. Let's get right on into it. Since we last spoke, we've had a couple of new fight announcements to bring to you guys. First of which, we do have to mention, I suppose, women. That's right, we have a ranked matchup between the number 8th ranked women's bantamweight, Carolina Carol Rosa, and the number 11th ranked Pan Kianziad. Carolina Rosa, or better known as Carol Rosa, is 6-3 in the UFC, 16-3 professionally. Pan Kianziad, 16-8 professionally, 5-5 in the UFC. That's going down at UFC Vegas 95 on August 10th. I mean, I don't really have much to say about this one. I don't even know if either of them are coming off of wins. I think Carol Rosa might have beaten Yana Santos last time out. I don't know. The women's bantamweight division is in desperate need of help. I think, Kayla Harrison can definitely bring that. But other than that, the rest of the top 15 is just so boring. It hurts. It really hurts. Another matchup going down, September 7th at UFC Vegas 97, Isaac the Midwest Choppa Dalgarian, who is 6-1 in the UFC, will be taking on Brendan Morote, who lost his first official UFC fight. He got TKO'd in 20 seconds by Terrence McKinney. Those two hungry up-and-comers, I mean, both early 20s, should be exciting. Isaac Dalgarian had a lot of hype. He was 6-0 before he shockingly lost by a split decision, I think it was, to Christian Rodriguez, who we'll get to Christian in a minute. He fought this past weekend, didn't necessarily have the best weekend per se. Another matchup going down September 28th in Paris. You have Daria Zelina-Nikova, who is 9-1 professionally, won her UFC debut over Montserrat Rendon. She takes on Aileen Perez, also known as the twerking woman. That's right, she twerks after her wins. All the boys love her. 3-1 in the UFC, 10-2 professionally. Decent fight for this Paris card. But I'll tell you, a big fight going down in Paris. This is the one we care about. The co-main event, Nazarene Imavov, the number 4 ranked guy in the world at middleweight, takes on the number 7 ranked Brendan All In Allen. Nazarene, 14-4. He's on a little 2-fight win streak, including a 4th round finish of Jared Cannonier in June. So, I mean, he's coming in with some momentum. Also beating Roman Dolidze, Joaquin Buckley. This guy is legit. Brendan Allen, he's on like a 6 or 7 fight win streak. I mean, come on, just beat Paul Craig in November. Legit is just incredible. Just incredible. This is an amazing matchup. I knew it was rumored to be the main event, but apparently it was like it changed or something. I don't really know what was up with that, but happy it's going down. And the winner of this could be looking at a title shot. I don't want to say anything, but I could see a title shot in the future for the winner of these two. So, exciting stuff there. And the last fight that's been officially announced, Kevin Jussett versus Brian Battle, going down in Paris, a little welterweight matchup. Kevin Jussett is 2-0 in the UFC, wins over Kiefer Crosby and Song Kinong. And as for Brian Battle, 5-1 in the UFC. That one loss is to Renat Fakhretdinov, who's on a 22-fight win streak. I should put that out there. Other than that, I mean, he's finished AJ Fletcher, Takashi Sato, Gabe Green. He's a finisher. He's coming to bring it. Love Brian Battle. And moving down from middleweight to welterweight has helped his career exponentially. Like, it's completely changed his entire career perspective around, if you want to put it like that. So excited to see what goes down. Happy for that. There we go. Good stuff there. Rumored, not officially locked in, but just all about to be made official. An August 10th main event between Marcin Tybura and Sergey Spivak in the men's heavyweight division. Just what we want, two heavyweights on an Apex card main event. Sergey's ranked number 9, Marcin 8. Both coming off of, actually, I think Spivak. Did he lose his last fight, or he might have won? I honestly cannot remember with these guys. But being honest, I cannot remember some of these lower-ranked heavyweights. Very brutal. Very brutal, I can't lie. It's not going to be the most exciting matchup. Sergey's going to want to bring it to the ground. Marcin will want it on the feet. Probably riding with Spivak for that one. But all I know is both of those guys will get finished by everyone above them. And the big news, I know Dana White was kind of going on and on about a bunch of stuff today. But here we are. Here we are. Here's all the big news. Apparently, Conor McGregor versus Michael Chandler is not official, but they are looking to get it done by the end of the year. The only real date that's even available is December, which is looking like UFC 310. So hopefully that can go down. I'm very nervous that, you know, this fight will never happen, but December, T-Mobile Arena could be the date. Let's hope so. Also, Arman Tsarukyan, of course, he was suspended, you know, for apparently punching some fan or something, but the fan said he deserved it. He just wanted free tickets in return. But the commission suspended him until October. It does end, his suspension does end right before what is presumably going to be UFC 308 in Abu Dhabi. So the UFC has verbally confirmed that Arman Tsarukyan, the number one contender, will be fighting Islam Makhachev in a rematch 5 years in the making. I'm excited for that one. Some unfortunate news before we get to the juicy stuff. John Jones, that's right, your men's heavyweight champion, the apparent GOAT for a lot of people, was charged with 2 misdemeanors and could face jail time for an incident involving 2 drug testing officials who actually filed a police report against them. If he is found guilty, he'll be fined $1,500 and face up to a year in jail. Unreal. Let's make Tom Aspinall the official champion. This is just getting embarrassing. This is just getting embarrassing with John Jones. But the big news, the fun news, we like to end with some fun news. The UFC Noche main event is rumored to be Sean O'Malley versus Merab Dvevishvili September 14th at the Sphere. Super excited for this one. Apparently, it was rumored Ilia Topuria and Max Holloway was going to be the main event with Sean O'Malley on that same card, but apparently Sean O'Malley is going to be the main event. They might have Alexa Grasso fight Valentina Shevchenko or Manon Fiorot on the co-main event, and Ilia Topuria versus Max Holloway will be going down at UFC 307 in Utah with Julia Pena versus Joaquin Pettin as the co-main event. Interesting stuff there. Don't really know what to make of all this. A lot of stuff going on, but I just hope all these matchups happen. You know, no matter where they're at, as long as they're happening, I'm a happy camper. And that's as much as I need to get me good in the UFC. So there we are, guys. Fun stuff all about. But yeah, no more new fights, no more new news. When we record our next episode this week, we'll have to see if anything matures. Dana White, you know, he's always dropping stuff left and right. I'll tell you what else was dropping left and right, and that was bullets. That was bullets, guys. That's right. If you did not hear, Donald Trump was apparently shot at. Okay, not apparently, he was shot at. I've seen the video. He has head turned just in time, but I just kind of wanted to touch on this a little bit because it's absolutely crazy that in my lifetime I witnessed a president almost get assassinated. A lot of weird stuff around this. You know me, I'm a little conspiracy nut. I like to look at conspiracy theories, but with this, I'm just gonna leave it. I'm just gonna leave it. There's already so many conspiracies. People are saying Trump faked it. People are saying it was an inside job. You know, I can also get behind the inside job. People are saying it was a lone shooter, that the kid was bullied, but it doesn't really make sense because the kid was a Republican. He was a registered Republican. So why would he kill Donald Trump? You know, how did Secret Service not stop anything? A lot of weird stuff with this. You know, everyone I've talked to, they all think different things. But it's just crazy to me. It is absolutely crazy that I'm, you know, I honestly think that the country, the, you know, our government tried to assassinate Donald Trump. I do not doubt it. I do not doubt they did to JFK, for goodness sakes. You don't think they would do it to Donald Trump. Donald Trump surviving it, you know, of course, getting in the air, fist pumping, fight, 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 blood coming down from his ear. And all I see is just people rooting for him, celebrities, music artists, random people. I mean, the amount of black community support I've seen for Trump is absolutely insane. And I mean, he just announced Vance, I mean, the senator for Ohio, is going to be his vice president. So, you know, he seems like a good guy. I don't know too much about him. But we're ramping up, guys. November's going to come. More events like this are going to happen. And I would not be surprised if another assassination attempt took place. I kid you not. It's just absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. In broad daylight, you know, this God save Trump. You know, most of people like to say, oh, you know, God doesn't like Trump. But, I mean, if he hadn't turned his head a split second, boom, right through his brain, and we'd have been seeing videos of him dead, which would have been even more crazy. Just the whole scenario is absolutely disgusting. You know, I would never wish Joe Biden to be assassinated. I would not wish Hillary Clinton to be assassinated. I've learned that if you just pray that God saves their souls, miracles can happen because there's evil out there. There's right, and these people get conflicted by evil. You know, they all reach a point, all these politicians, with greed, with hunger. And as much as Trump is a billionaire, you know, he can do whatever he wants. He has oddly decided to continue to run, continue to change this country, continue to better the world. And there's just something about that that I really respect. I know some people hate him. And, you know, honestly, if you hate Trump, I don't hate you. You know, if you like Trump, I don't necessarily love you more than the next person. Okay, I've learned that it is division that is going to be the death of America. That's what happened to Rome, all the great civilizations of history. Division from within. You know, no outside force ever stopped any other force. The Mongolians, you know, the hunt for power was the death of them. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. And I feel like that's happening with America. If a civil war does happen, I will definitely not be partaking. I will try and be neutral, just as long as you don't shoot my dogs. I'll have no issues with you. But yes, happy that Trump did not get assassinated, or else the country would have been in an absolute uproar. Yeah, I don't really know what else is going to happen. Any more debates or anything like that. But big stuff in the political world. I don't know what more you can say. In the fake political world, of The Boys universe, that's right, one of my favorite TV shows out right now, season 4, episode 7 recently dropped. This is spoilers, so spoiler warning if you have not seen it. It was great, great, best episode, I think, of the season, you could argue. You know, actually, the more that I think about it, was this the one with, no, it wasn't the weird one. Episode 6, they had, it was like, oh man, it was weird. Episode 6 was really weird. I don't even want to talk about it. There was like a sex dungeon. It was like Batman and Robin, if they were kinky and stuff. Hey, you know, that's super vague. I don't really want to talk about it. But episode 7, my jaw dropped at the end of it with the cliffhanger. So I knew I just had to come on here and discuss it. So episode 7, I mean, where are we at? Well, here, this is all from Wikipedia. So Butcher bails Frenchie out of jail. So Frenchie's out of jail. Okay, Frenchie was in jail. He turned himself in. He's back out, and he asked him to assist Samir with the virus. Of course, Samir, who was who's the head popper? If anyone's followed it, head popper, Newman, she's like the vice president, trying to kill the president to become president, and her lover, her daughter's, I don't know if they're actually like together, but her daughter's father, there we go, her lover, is trying to recreate the virus that could kill the Supes, apparently kill Homelander. And that was going on in this. And I mean, just you even see Butcher, how it was revealed that he, Jeffrey Dean Morgan's character isn't real. It's all in his head. And, you know, Samir, this fight thing where he's like, your guy, he talks to himself. And it's kind of like, okay, everyone's kind of realizing Butcher is losing his mind. MM gave up leadership of the boys, passing the baton back to Butcher again, and considered leaving with Monica and Janine, but A-Train convinced him not to leave. That's right. A-Train turning from a heel to a baby face. Talk about a WWE turn for the decade. Crazy to see A-Train's character development in this show. I definitely feel like he's going to die in the final episode, but they could always throw a curveball and not do that. The boys, you know, the main group, they discover a plan to assassinate Singer, you know, literally what just happened to Trump, that will be carried out by an unidentified soup, if I can speak, shapeshifter, which the shapeshifters are so gross in the boys universe. They like shed their skin, like they rip it off. And it's just blood. It's going all over. It is so gross. They're actual shapeshifters. And I kind of like this universe because it really puts like a dark and just disgusting spin on what actual superpowers might be like. Shapeshifters in this universe. Very interesting. Homelander kills Webweaver in just disgusting fashion. I thought he was going to rip off his arm, and he ripped his entire body in half from the short way, not by the waist, by the freaking shoulder blade all the way to his groin. It was crazy because he believed that he was the mole, but then it was revealed that he wasn't. Huey, he went to Newman's house to convince her to stop everything, but that was to no avail. Honestly, felt just like a dumb scene. It's kind of like, okay, Newman can kill him at any moment. Huey doesn't have any superpowers anymore. And actually, I was talking about my buddies Friday, and they were talking about Saturday, and they were like, yeah, Huey's actually my least favorite character on the show. And I was like, I don't freaking mind Huey. I find him pretty interesting. Homelander sent the Deep in Black Noir to kill the boys, Black Noir 2, I should say. They start a fight with Butcher and Annie, and they're actually saved by A-Train and MM, which is pretty funny. A pretty funny scene. I mean, the Deep is just absolutely diabolical, freaking sleeping with his octopus. Absolutely disgusting. I kid you guys not, that's the thing. And, I mean, Black Noir, who's just an absolute troll in this film. He's an actor playing this, but he can actually fly. Some pretty cool scenes in this episode. Homelander expels Sage from the Seven for hiding A-Train as the leak. I thought he was honestly going to kill her because she kept talking back. Tired of being used by Vaught, Ryan finally gets fed up and interrupts a live showing they were doing for some Muppets-type show, and gives a speech and leaves, basically says that everyone should stay with their family because that's what his mother would wanted. Homelander did not look happy, to say the least. Frenchie and Kimiko reconcile. You know, they reconcile by telling each other that they blame themselves for their past, which is kind of like good to see. Hopefully that Frenchie's not going to be gay anymore. That made no sense. What a random storyline. And then Samir injected Kimiko with the dose of the virus as Frenchie and her were about to tell him, hey, you can, we'll let you go after you finish it. He stabs Kimiko with the virus and books it out of there. And you just see the virus taking over Kimiko's leg. But thankfully, Frenchie thinks fast and he cuts off her leg. Gruesome scene. Oh my gosh, just gruesome. And he escapes. Frenchie saws off her leg so the virus doesn't spread. So now they have the leg to look at. And then they're all in a bar. Butcher, Annie, and Huey. They're all kind of there. And a Butcher passes out in a bar. And you kind of see that this tumor is getting the best of him. And it might be the end. And then you kind of see Huey and Annie. And Annie's kind of throwing on her old super suit. Uniform. There it is. Uniform. And she does the deed with Huey. And then Huey's asleep. And you find out that she is actually a shapeshifter, and literally her eyes change because that's what happens with the shapeshifters, and it cuts to it, and the real Annie Starlight is shackled in a room somewhere and is being impersonated by the shapeshifter, and she's freaking imprisoned. I mean, my jaw dropped. I knew I had to talk about it on here. Eric Kipke, amazing work producing this episode. Absolutely crazy. Had me shocked. Let me say, when my jaw's on the floor, then you know you did something good. But episode 8 comes out this July 18th, this Thursday, I meant to say. And you best bet that I'll be going in, because this is the final episode before the final season. And I already know that they are going to be going out all out for the final season. All 8 episodes going to be exactly what the fans want. So this will be the final episode before that. It's called Assassination Run. Pretty weird how we just had the whole Trump assassination thing and we're having an episode called Assassination Run. I don't know. The world is a stage. It's all a rich man's trick. That's your little info for the day. And also some info for the day for you guys is that we, of course, here on the Surprise Ship Podcast do rankings. We love to rank stuff all the time. And we did a 5 months ranking just like a month ago, probably a bit over a month ago. And it's been updated since then. So I figured I'd touch on a couple of my updates. I really haven't made too many, if I'm being honest, but I figured I would just kind of give you guys a little insight into where we're at in our year rankings. So first off, pay-per-view events, I mean, the best events so far of the year, easily UFC 300 takes the cake. I still have UFC 299 at the second best and UFC 298 at the third best. But at the fourth best, I actually have UFC 302. There's just something about UFC 302. So many great moments there. And I know there were some duds. Paul Costa, Sean Strickland, one of them. Ian Gary, MVP. Oh, no, Ian Gary versus MVP went down at 303, which we'll talk about. But, I mean, Dustin Poirier on that card was just, it was absolutely ridiculous. Kevin Holland, everything else on that card was absolutely amazing. Number five, we still got UFC 301 in Brazil. And UFC 303, you know, it's second to worst, but I mean, that's no one's fault. The card was put together, like, quite honestly, on hours' notice. And Alex Pereira ended the night with a bang. So it's hard to, it's really hard to kind of hate on that because it was just such a fire ending to the show. But UFC 300, I don't think it's being passed. It might be the best event of all time. So many great moments there. We'll also talk about Knockout of the Year and Fight of the Year is currently both the exact same fight, Max Holloway versus Justin Gaethje. I mean, there just really isn't anything else that is up there, you know, if I'm being honest. Dustin Poirier versus Islam was pretty entertaining, but I mean, just nothing's come close as far as a fight of the night. I mean, as for KOs, we've had some amazing KOs. I mean, Volkan Ozdemir knocking out Johnny Walker. Pretty good moment at Saudi Arabia. Peyton Talbot knocking out Giannis Gamori, but not about 2 weeks ago. Joe Pyfer knocking out Marc-Andre Barriot. Alex Pereira and Jiří Procházka too. But I just don't think anything takes the cake over Max Holloway knocking out Justin Gaethje. And, you know, you use the term greatest knockout of all time. It's up there. It's in the discussion. No, not even joking. Submission of the year, I think Islam's main disappointment is really up there. Definitely Michelle Pereira getting back-to-back cards where he had minute submissions. It's pretty impressive. Brian Ortega's comeback over Yair. I think Angela Hill gained her first ever career submission at almost 40 years old. It's super impressive. But, I mean, Islam Makhachev defending his belt, is that's where it's at. An interesting one, title fights. This is what we like to see. Number one, I still think, is the bantamweight fight between Sean O'Malley and Marlon Vera. I mean, I remember just watching that with my family, my cousins, and it was just absolutely ridiculous. The shots Marlon Vera was eating, Sean O'Malley just picking him apart, super entertaining. Number two, Ito Pura knocking out, I mean, Alexander Volkanovski. It was so shocking because it's like, I predicted it. I predicted he would knock him out in round two, and it was like, you know, you didn't actually think it was going to come true, and it did. And he did it in nasty fashion. And Ito Pura, man, give him a main event in Spain. Give it to him. Number three, though, the number three, definitely the lightweight fight between Dustin Poirier and Islam Makhachev. Definitely in the number three title fight of the year. I mean, Dustin Poirier, you know, that might not have been his final fight, but he fought like it was. And I've never seen Islam Makhachev push to that limit before. I mean, he was pushed to darker places than the Alexander Volkanovski fight. He was actually in danger game finished at times. Incredible. Number four, middleweight fight between Sean Strickland and Dricus du Plessis. You just can't deny them. That fight was great. They gave it their all. Very competitive. And at number five, I have Jiří Procházka versus Alex Pereira. And you may be like, why is that at five? You know, that was an amazing knockout. And it's simply because Jiří Procházka, you know, his weakness is Alex Pereira. You know, Jiří had nothing in this fight. Every time he got touched, I felt like he was going to get dropped. And Alex Pereira was just too dominant. And that goes to the number six one. That's the knockout over Jamahal Hill. And I do think the Jiří one was much better than the Jamahal Hill one. But like I said, they're both up there, neck and neck. Absolutely amazing. At number, where are we at? One, two, three, four, five, six. At number seven, flyweight fight between Alexander Pantoa and Steve Ercik went the distance. Showed that Steve Ercik has great striking, but no takedown defense. Women's strawweight, second to last. Like I said, nothing much there. The women's bantamweight fight, I mean, that's just a terrible fight to kick off the year. UFC 297, Mayra Bueno Silva versus Raquel Penton. No interest in that. Just an L. Just an L. And when it comes to fight night events, you know, we're going to be ranking main events, of course. But when it comes to fight night events, UFC Louisville, I still think, is the best of the year. I think UFC St. Louis was the number two. UFC Saudi Arabia at the three. Just some quick changes. Mexico at the four. UFC Atlantic City at the five. I think Denver comes in at six for the sixth best. And every event with a crowd, no matter how bad, will always be better than an Apex card. So pretty much every other Apex card is like six to 14 when it comes to rankings for the year. We do have a couple more Apex cards. I know we got Vegas 94 coming up this weekend. You also got Vegas 95 going down in, what is that, August? August. I think we have two in August, two Apex cards, because I know there's an Apex 97 going down in, what is it, guys? September. But I'm thinking they go to 100 Apex events, and then they might stop. I don't know. That could just be a hypothesis. But if it does, I would not be angry, because the Apex cards are really bad. Really bad. But that's our update for the rankings currently for the year. Entertaining as could be. We love it. We love it. We love it. We love it. Know what else I love? The Verdict MMA app. One of my favorite apps out there. It is just so good. I get to talk with all other UFC fans, MMA fans, and we get to rank fights live. That's right. You actually get to look at the fights live, rank them, see what's going on. And I had this idea. What if I posed a question on their forum page, and every week, every episode even, we answer it? So that's what this is. This is asking the Verdict MMA community, Verdict Q&A, if you will. We'll think of a catchy name for it. But I posed the question, who is most likely to pass Anderson Silva's 16-fight win streak? Anderson Silva, of course, started off his UFC run winning his first 16 fights, 16-0 undefeated in the UFC before Chris Weidman shockingly knocked him out. Kamaru Usman has gotten to 15. He's been the closest so far, but we do have some others that are right frickin' there. First off, I got a numerous amount of people saying Islam. Sugar Sean, one of the top, obviously these are just their handles on Verdict, but Sugar Sean said Islam. Draymond Green MMA said Islam is the most likely. Leon Edwards isn't far behind him, I believe, which could end up being a crazy fight if Islam goes up in weight to fight Leon Edwards. If I had to pick a non-obvious person, I'd go Shavkat Rakhmonov or Ia Topura, who are still a while off. Completely agree. Islam Makhachev is at 14 straight wins. One more and I'll tie Kamaru Usman. And if he beats Arman Tsarukyan, you best bet he should go up in weight for a chance to become double champion against Leon Edwards. While also, what was I saying? Retaining his belt and getting to 16 wins. Leon Edwards is up there, but I think his no contest against Bilal Muhammad in 2021 cancels that. I don't know if that's necessarily, obviously I think we can look past that, but I think that might cancel. I think no contest kind of cancel that out. Shavkat Rakhmonov, he is 18-0, 18 finishes. I think he's 6 or 7-0 to kick off his UFC career. I mean, he's absolutely incredible. He's legit. Ia Topura, what is he, 14-0? A finishing machine. I like both of those picks. Brody Lae said Leon probably could have if he had gotten his title shot when he was supposed to, but he's 32. He'll have the belt for maybe 3 more years if he's fighting infrequently. Much more likely that we'll see Shavkat as champ by 2026. I completely agree. You kind of forget about the age aspect with these guys. You really do. And when it comes to Leon Edwards, he has not been active. He became champion in 2021 and has had 2 title defenses. Alex Pereira won the freaking light heavyweight championship. That's not the stat, but Alex Pereira won the belt. Alex Pereira won the belt in 2023 and has had 2 title defenses in 2024. That's what I was going to say. It just shows the difference there. Oliveira Sub said Islam probably. Everyone's thinking Islam Makhachev. Arman Tsarukyan obviously poses a challenge, but Islam's beaten him before. And after seeing what Islam did to Dustin Poirier, it's almost like, who can't he beat? 3-Piece in a Soda said Michael Chandler. Oh, you said win streak. Never mind. Of course, he's trolling. Michael Chandler was actually getting into a Twitter beef with Dustin Poirier, and I don't understand what Michael Chandler is on about. I hope he realizes that he's on a losing streak. He lost to Dustin Poirier last time he fought in 2022. He has no leverage whatsoever in the UFC. I honestly just want him to fight anyone. Fight Matheus Gerbaut. Fight Charles Oliveira to rematch. Just stop wasting your life waiting for Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor is a billionaire. He could fight or not fight. It doesn't really matter to him. Turd Ferguson said Islam is the obvious answer, I think. After that, I'll go with Merab as he's at 10 straight wins. I also think Merab Dvorishvili is a great prediction. And if it is Merab versus Sean O'Malley at the Sphere, I honestly might have to go with Merab Dvorishvili because, as much as Sean O'Malley is great striking, he has not faced anyone like Merab Dvorishvili before. And you could say, okay, Aljamain Sterling, but Aljamain shot 1 takedown in the first round. O'Malley was able to defend it. And then round 2 got caught right away. Now, I don't doubt that Merab can get caught, but I also don't think Merab is going to be hesitant at all. I think he's going to go right forward, and he's going to put him up against the cage, take him through grappling. But yet again, it's so close. The UFC matchmaking is absolutely phenomenal. I don't know who to pick between Sean O'Malley and Merab Dvalishvili, but, I mean, 16-fight win streak, he's already at 10. Merab, greatest shot in the bantamweight division, for sure. And the last one we got, we got a lot more. The right hook said Ito Pure, in my opinion. I mean, come on, he's so young. Champion, agreed, undefeated. Ange said Topura. Yet again. Max Holloway fan said it's Leon, in my opinion. Islam is at 14 right now, meaning he's going to have to defend two more times. Armin Tsarukyan, Matheus Gamrot, or Charles Oliveira. And then he's likely to move up and try to get that 17th win and double champ status, but he does not get past Leon, in my opinion. Wow. Very fascinating there. Like the take. I will say, you know, I honestly favor Islam Makhachev over Leon Edwards. I just think a bulked up Islam Makhachev is going to be dangerous, as he kind of does play weight bully. At 155 pounds. He's strong. Let me tell you, Islam Makhachev is strong. His back muscles are insane. I think it was either Dana or Hunter was saying, I didn't know that back muscles existed before there was a picture of Islam Makhachev flexing, because he is just so inhumanly strong. Islam Makhachev getting the most votes on the page. Jays 206, Islam. Majik Loss, Islam. And Brody Lay said it again. It'll never happen again, in his opinion. Anderson Silva got that many because the sport was young. There's just so many competitive athletic fighters now, that's just not possible. That's another great point. But, I mean, what do we got? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. We got 8 votes for Islam Makhachev. So Islam Makhachev seems to be the favorite, but I do like that Brody Lay. I do like that take. I mean, Anderson Silva was not really fighting necessarily the greatest competition compared to today. I mean, the guys up today would eat the past for breakfast. Oh, my goodness. So it's tough to say. And, you know, Anderson Silva was in his prime. He was the goat of his time. But we all know what happened when he started facing Israel Adesanya, Jared Cannonier, even Uriah Hall's past their prime. He started getting finished. So I don't know. Very interesting. I really like this segment. It lets me know what other people are thinking. But when it comes to who will pass Anderson Silva's 16-fight win streak, it says, I mean, the community says, Islam Makhachev. So that's who we'll say is going to dethrone it's possible. It's possible. I'll give you that. But not probable. Not probable. Tell you what is probable. The fact we're going to tell you 10 new things in pop culture. That's right. Of course, it is time for Discussing Film, where we discuss 10 new things in the movie, TV show world, just the anything world, if you really want to call it that. And we kind of give our thoughts. We go through 10 things randomly off of Discussing Film, and I give my thoughts. So let's not waste any time. Let's get right on into it. The original four reunited for the final season of Stranger Things. Of course, you have Mike. You have the black kid. You have Will, the gay kid. And you have the curly-haired kid. That's right. I cannot remember any other names. But it's crazy. Final season of Stranger Things is hopefully going to be dropping next year on Netflix. It says apparently it is. Going to be insane from what I've heard. Every single episode's going to be like 2 hours, 2.5 hours long. Every episode's going to be a movie. I'm pumped for it. I'm excited. And it's nice to see the cast kind of joining back up together. And kind of just, I don't know, it's really, really, it's a relief. It's a relief that this is actually going to transpire. Number two, Micah Monroe says, when I started horror movies, I was the hot girl running around covered in blood. I wasn't interesting, unique, or layered. Now there are so many credible female roles within this genre that they're usually the most interesting scripts that I'm reading. Kind of read that wrong. Gosh, I don't even know who was typing that. But of course, Micah Monroe, the star of Long Legs and the new hit horror film out. Now I do kind of want to see it, but it does kind of look spooky. So I don't know if I want to see it in a movie theater. I might just wait till it's out on DVD and I can watch it in the safety of my living room. But yeah, I'm very happy that they're giving out more female lead roles in horror, because that means I know that they aren't going to die. You know, I hate predictability in horror films. I don't really watch a lot of horror films, so it's certainly something interesting there. But Long Legs out now. I'm torn on seeing it. I'll be honest, I'm really torn on seeing it. It's apparently the number one movie in America after Despicable Me 4. Some very hilarious marketing. The marketing for this movie has been off the charts. Number three, a Discussing Film posted, what emotions should be introduced in a potential Inside Out 3? This is what Twitter said. Freak, horny, love, grief, shame, pride, inevitable, addiction, and smash. So just so you know, Twitter is never going to change. Just a bunch of degenerates on there. Funny moment for number four. Will Smith performed Fresh Prince of Bel-Air in front of a $85,000 crowd at an influencer boxing event. And pretty funny, he was kind of like singing along and the crowd was like singing the chorus. And then he'd like take the mic away and like point it to the crowd for verse. And the crowd wouldn't say anything because they had no idea what he was saying. Will Smith, kind of the past. I mean, Bad Boys took off. But Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, I don't even know the words to that. I never watched the show. I don't know the words to it. Don't expect a random crowd at a boxing event to know it, Will. Giancarlo Esposito says no one has correctly guessed who he is playing in Captain America Brave New World. That's right, the trailer for Captain America Brave New World dropped. I watched it. I wasn't the most impressed. I don't know why. I wasn't really sold. You know, it certainly has a grimmer tone. The CGI for Red Hulk looks absolutely terrible. Was it General Thunder, Thunderbolt Ross or whatever? Looks terrible. I think the whole premise is that different governments are trying to mine Tiamat, you know, the big giant from Eternals that emerged from the Earth. They're finally going to talk about that 3 years later. And it's just basically about Sam Wilson trying to fill Steve Rogers' shoes. So, I don't know. Might see it, might not. I have really no interest in it. All I really want to see is Deadpool versus Wolverine. That's all I really want to see. Number six, Anthony Starr thinks The Boys ending with season 5 will be the right time. I don't want us to be the show that pushed one season too far, he said, and fell flat. I think we deserve to go out with our heads up, and I completely agree. Season 4 is starting to feel like that. Certainly if you watch, I mean, the first season and this current season, it's a completely different show. So I think going out with season 5 is the correct move right there. And that should probably drop next year, maybe in 2 years. I hope not 2 years. But should be a really interesting finale. And I have no idea what's going to happen. I have not read any of the comics. I've been trying to stay away. And also the comics are just disgusting. They really need to investigate the author of those comics. Number 7, the Haktua girl has got several offers to star in movies but turned them all down. She said one producer wanted to reshoot the movie's ending to include her. I've talked to these producers and said, hire an actress. I'm not a professional actress. Look, let me tell you, I feel bad for the Haktua girl. She's been given this fame, obviously against her will. She didn't ask for the fame. It was given to her. And obviously it's cringy. Obviously she's famous for no reason. I'm not trying to be mean here. You know, she's a decent looking girl, but she's not like breathtaking. I'm so sorry. That sounds so mean, but you know what I'm saying here. She's no Ana de Armas, Margot Robbie. So it's just kind of perplexing. You know, she's getting all this, way too much publicity, and I feel bad because she's already getting hate. I mean, people are mad she's not starting an OnlyFans. That should definitely tell you there's something wrong with our society here. So obviously the Haktua girl, I mean, at the end of the day, she's famous for a joke about sucking dick. Let's not even sugarcoat it. So, sorry, I think her name's Haley. Maybe Haley, I don't know. But, you know, I offer my sympathies for you. I'll be honest, if any of us were in that situation, we'd take advantage of it. She's kind of taking advantage of it, but also not. You know, she's not opening, like, a clothing brand. No, I'd even say if she did OnlyFans, it should not be sexual. It should be, like, she does, like, her own thing, like, A Day in My Life, but it's on OnlyFans. I don't know. I don't know what she's doing, but I wish her the best. I wish her the best. I hope that the hate does not get to her. Number 8, the Despicable Me / Minions franchise has just passed 5 billion, billion with a B, worldwide is the highest grossing animated franchise ever. Wow. Just wow. Gru and the Minions are freaking rich, and Steve Carell has definitely made a bag off of voicing Gru. I mean, holy cow. I freaking love these movies. I'm probably not going to see Despicable Me 4 at the theater. I'll wait till it comes out to DVD or something, but who doesn't love a little Despicable Me? I love the Minions. Some people hate the Minions. Not me. Not me. I love the Minions. Number 9, I mean, sticking on the animated movie track, Inside Out 2 has become the third highest grossing animated movie of all time, passing Frozen. I mean, I do not get the hype. You know, I obviously understand Inside Out 2 is not for me, but it's getting so much money. It is absolutely ridiculous. I'm very impressed, to say the least. I'm very impressed, to say the least. Certainly that. And I'll tell you the last thing we're going to talk about, number 10, what I'm most impressed with is that Euphoria Season 3 is beginning filming in January. The main cast will be returning. Absolutely crazy. I mean, the ending for season 2 was, it had to come back. Euphoria, they might end it here. I think they should end it with season 3. It would be a great 3-season, little trilogy season run. Because obviously Fez is dead. They killed his brother in the final of season 2. And just a lot of death is at that show. Jacob Elordi kind of blew up a bit. Zendaya, obviously, is a star. You know, she doesn't really need this show. But there's some other, Sydney Sweeney's blown up from it. But certainly a lot of interesting stuff around Euphoria. But happy that they're going to be doing one final season. And I just know it's going to be emotional. They're probably going to do some shock factor, some sex scenes or something. But, it had a very emotional ending to season two. And it's wow. Just wow. Not really much to say. Happy it's going down. But those are 10 new things in the pop culture world, in the world of... Gosh, I don't even know what you want to call it. Hollywood? I don't really know. Not a big fan of Hollywood, if you ask me. But I like movies and shows, so I guess I am. Let's round this episode out, guys. Let's round it all out with our UFC Denver official recap of all the action that went down. Obviously, some stuff transpired. How do we do on picks, you may ask? Well, we're now 169 and 111. So we're up 58 units. We don't actually bet, so we're actually not up any units. But we go 6-5 on the card. So not too bad on the card. Got 12 fights to talk about. Let's not waste any time. Let's get right into it. So UFC Denver. Alrighty, we kicked off the evening with a little welterweight action, which, if no one knew, I mean, this match was made on 5 days' notice, you know? I mean, Evan Elder versus Darius Flowers, and we predicted that Evan Elder would get this done, and lo and behold, Evan Elder did exactly that. A little round two arm triangle, too. How about that? That's only the second submission win for Evan Elder in his career. Good stuff. Good way to get the card going. I mean, I don't even know how I said. I usually have this noted down, but they didn't have him on verdict, so I wasn't able to put my official finish weigh in. But Evan Elder getting it done. Good stuff for the kid. Little two-fight win streak now. How about that? Round one, Evan Elder had him on the feet. 37 significant strikes, 24. Darius Flowers landed a takedown early round two, got reversed. Evan Elder got into an arm triangle, and that was that. Darius Flowers lost. Okay, 3-fight losing streak now. He's been submitted twice in that run, and he's actually now been submitted 6 times of his 8 losses. So Darius Flowers definitely getting cut from the UFC, but as for Evan Elder, he's fought his way back. He's 9-2 now, six finishes of those 9 wins. I'm happy for him. Very happy for Evan. Good stuff for him. And as far as the welterweight division goes, I mean, sky's the limit. Sky's the limit if you're Evan Elder. A couple of guys fought later on in the card, so I might use them as an example of someone who he could fight in the future. After that, we head to the middleweight division, and guess what? We predicted this one correctly, too, as Andre Petroski, who was somehow an underdog at plus 105, no idea how, just grapples Josh Fremm to death. I mean, I knew this would happen. I thought he'd get a submission in here, personally. But I'll take an Andre Petroski win, no matter what. 3 of 4 on takedowns for 12 minutes and 50 seconds. I don't think you guys understand how crazy that is. The fight is 15 minutes. The fight is 15 minutes. Let's do 12 points. What's 50 divided by 60? 0.83. So if we do 12.83 divided by 15, 85% of this match, Andre Petroski was in control. I mean, come on, give him his props. Josh Fremm had no prayer. Defended one takedown. But 4.5 minutes control time in round one, 4 minutes 20 seconds in round two, and 4 minutes in round number three. Only 30-27s, though. No one was really feeling 10-8s out there for scorecards. I don't know. But Andre Petroski picking up his 11th career win. He's now 11-4, snapping a 2-fight losing streak. Happy to see it for Andre, big Andre Petroski fan. We would have won money if we bet on him. As for Josh Fremm, second straight loss, kind of tough. He's now sitting at 2-4 in the UFC. I'm sure both of these guys will be back. As far as who they could fight next, I mean, I don't really know. I'd like to see Andre Petroski fight another grappler, really. I always love grappler v. grappler matchups. And Josh Fremd, I mean, he'll probably get fed to a bum. If I'm being honest, he's probably getting fed to a bum. That's what I think will happen. After that, we headed to the women's division as Luana Santos took on Maria Agapova, and we nailed it. Maria Agapova losing, that is. Haha. Luana Santos with a submission. Round late. I said round two. She got done in, or round early, I should say. I said round two. She got down in done in round one. 3 minutes, 27 seconds, too, might I add. Landed a takedown right about 2.5 minutes in, and just got into control, took her back, and got the submission. Luana Santos, 5-fight win streak, 4th career submission, 5th career finish. Incredible. Incredible stuff for Luana Santos. This shouldn't really be surprising, as Maria Agapova has been finished in 4 of her 5 bouts now. So we knew this was coming. 3-0 in the UFC for Luiana Santos with 2 round 1 finishes. Good stuff for Luiana. She called for a top 15 opponent, wanted someone in the women's flyweight division. How about freaking, I don't know, Casey O'Neill or someone? I mean, Tracy Cortez? I don't know. Good stuff, Luiana Santos. And she was giving the people what they want. She had the fans going crazy when she was in her post-fight celebration. I swear, these women that are semi-attractive, they like to move their hips and all the UFC boys go crazy. Maria Agapova returned after 2 years. Does not go well. She's now been submitted in 3 straight fights and went 2-4 in the UFC, finishing all those fights. Yeah, Maria Agapova should not be coming back whatsoever. Luiana Santos, though, we will happily have you back in the women's flyweight division. Good win, Luiana. We predicted it. We kept it rolling, guys. We kept it rolling as I had Montel Jackson beating Damon Blackshear. I didn't really doubt it whatsoever. I'll tell you what I did doubt is how long this matchup would last as I had this go in the distance. You know, I had Montel Jackson winning by decision, and Montel decided to get a 18-second knockout. He only landed 4 punches. Okay, dropped him once, 3 quick follow-ups on the ground. That was that. Montel Jackson is a freaking beast. A animal. A different breed. How about his 8th career knockout? Holy cow. Should have been a way bigger favorite. 14-2 now. 14-2. Incredible. He's now on a 5-fight win streak. Okay? In the last year, he's gotten 2 round 1 knockouts, both performance bonuses. Montel Jackson, I'm giving you a ranked opponent. I am giving Montel Jackson a ranked opponent. I mean, just, I love it. I love it. Montel Jackson, too, likable guy. Likable guy. You know what? His nickname. What is Montel Jackson's nickname? I think it rhymes Quick. All right, they don't call him Quick for nothing. Nothing, okay? 5-fight win streak, 3 of those round one knockouts. In the UFC in general, I mean, he's 8-1 his last 9. Okay, only losses are to Ricky Simone, and last loss was in 2020 to Brett Johns. I mean, I don't know who Brett Johns is, but Montel Jackson, impressive win. This is going to land him a ranked opponent. I don't know who, though. Maybe number 15th ranked Pedro Munhoz, number 14th ranked Jonathan Martinez, number 11 ranked Kyler Phillips, number 9 ranked Rob Font, number 12 ranked Mauro Bautista. There's a lot of options. There's unlimited options for Montel Jackson. I'd give him number 14th ranked Jonathan Martinez. Jonathan's on a little lost to Jose Aldo. So Montel Jackson, that's who I'm going to be rooting for now. Absolutely love it. As for Damon Blackshear, that was the first time he's ever finished. Very tough. First time you ever finished, you're knocked down in 18 seconds. Now on a 2-fight losing streak. You know, it's tough, Damon Blackshear, but Montel Jackson was just better. And our little run of fights would end here at 5 as we start the evening out 5-0 on predictions. But I mean, that's pretty good. Pretty good start to evening. As the number 15th ranked Jasmine Jasu Devacious defended her rank spot in the women's flyweight division as she beat Fatina Klein on short notice. Now, she wasn't supposed to fight Fatina Klein whatsoever, but I believe who is she supposed to fight? She had a matchup with someone. Honestly, Vivian Arujo. She was supposed to fight someone above her. What's Vivian ranked? She's supposed to fight the number 10 girl in the world. Instead, she fights this undefeated up-and-comer, Fatima Klein, and just destroys her through all 3 rounds. 40 significant strikes to 39, total strikes 93 to 48. 4 of 6 on takedowns for about 8 minutes of control time. Jasmine had this in the bag. Fatima did outstrike her significantly in round 3. Did get outgrappled the worst in round number 3. But, yeah, Jasmine almost got that round 3 TKO. I thought it was coming. But, yeah, impressive stuff from Jasmine. Jasu Devicius will keep her spot in the rankings. I'd even bump her up to 14 or 13. 2-fight win streak now. 2-0 in 2024 as well. I mean, 11-3. Very good. Only losses in the UFC are to now Tracy Cortez and Natalia Silva. Those are aging pretty well. Those losses are aging pretty well. Fatima Klein, first loss, 6-1. You know, you're only 24. Fatima, same thing, end of the world. And Jasmine is a killer. Would love to see her rebook that Vivian Arujo fight. I mean, she's ranked number 10. I say we do that. Let's do it. All right, Jasmine, great win. And then the final prelim of the night. Not only did I predict this wrong, but I liked the guy that lost. Joshua Van, of course, the young and hungry up-and-comer. 22 years old on an 8-fight win streak. Dude, he was booked against Tatsuya Taira and Tagiro Limbekov at some points. Instead, he wound up with Charles Johnson. And for some reason, Charles Johnson is in his prime as he gets a freaking knockout win. or Joshua Van hit him with an uppercut at the start of round three, about 20 seconds in. Ref jumped in. That was that. Wow. Wow. Charles Johnson, round three knockout. Performance points, too. It was a good knockout, too. Might I add, his sixth career knockout, 10th career finish. Charles Johnson went from 0-3 on the verge of getting cut to now on a three-fight win streak. Wow. 3-0 in 2024. I mean, you know, obviously, Alex Pereira has two wins so far in 2024, both those title fights, both knockouts. Charles Johnson, only fighter to be 3-0. I'm throwing Charles Johnson in fighter of the year conversation. If he can get four or five wins, he's going to be in my top five or top three by end of the year. Michelle Pereira is also up there, too. But, I mean, just incredible work. Gene Silva, we'll get to him, too, in a minute. But Charles Johnson, incredible. Joshua Van, very tough. Very tough. First loss in, oh my gosh, a couple of years. A couple of years since Joshua Van just last lost. Man, it's tough. You know, only a second career loss, but he'll be back. He'll be back, and I mean, this fight was going. I mean, it was pretty even. It was pretty much a round apiece heading into round number three. And, I mean, round one, I mean, Round one, Charles Johnson landed more significant strikes, 44-22. Joshua Van did land a takedown, only held him down for 15 seconds. Round two, Joshua Van was lighting him up on the feet, 44 significant strikes, 36. Charles Johnson just energy dumped at the start of the round, and that was that. That was that. Energy, Charles Johnson. I love it. I think he called out Tiger Limbekov. I say we make that fight. Tiger's ranked number 13. You know, you also have Matt Schnell at 12. Let's give him a ranked opponent, guys. Let's give him a ranked opponent. I mean, Charles Johnson, 33 years old, 3-0 so far in 2024. Impressive. Okay. You know what? 5-1 in the prelims. That's not bad at all. I'll take 5-1 in the prelims. I'll tell you what I won't take is when I only predict one main card correctly, it was an absolute disgrace. Absolute disgrace. So, let's kick it off. First off, the cards start off horrible. The card started off horrible as Abdulrazak Alhassan took on Cody Brundage. And in 37 seconds, Cody Brundage managed to shoot a takedown and kept getting hit with shots. Abdulrazak Alhassan, 23 significant strikes to one, okay? And somewhere to the back of the head a bit, barely, but majority weren't. And Cody Brundage tried to pull the same act that he pulled with Jacob Malcolm. Dan Migliotta was not having it, and we got a no contest. Terrible way. Terrible way to start off the card. Both guys in need of a win, and we get no contest here. I say we run this fight back, rebook it a month or two down the line, but just a disgrace. Just a disgrace, if you ask me. Cody Brundage is a flopper. Abdulrazak Alhassan hitting a couple cheeky shots, but a majority weren't, and Cody Brundage was purposely putting his head in the way. I did not like that. I did not really care for that. So, no contest to kick off the card. Not the best. Then, Man, let me tell you, next fight up, we predicted it incorrectly. It's Christian Rodriguez. I mean, the kid had been on a four-fight win streak, finally fought someone who wasn't an up-and-comer, and gets shockingly submitted in round number one. He was winning round one, too. He was winning round one, too, was outstriking him 35-33, then got taken down, left his neck out, and Julian Rosa got a little submission win, a little guillotine with 11 seconds before round number one. Christian Rodriguez suffering the first submission loss of his career. As for Julian Arosa, this is now a two-fight win streak. 2-0 in the UFC in 2024. And both of those guillotine chokes. Come on, Julian Arosa. How about your 14th career win? Okay, and how about your 25th career finish? I'll give him his props. 30-12 now for Julian Arosa, 34 years old. Good stuff, man. Good stuff. Absolutely. I like to see that stuff. I really like to see that stuff. Julian Arosa, proving that you can turn around. You know, he gets knocked out two fights in a row, comes back, gets two submissions in a row. You know what? We maybe should have seen it coming. You know, Christian Rodriguez fighting young up-and-comers. He finally fights a veteran and loses. I don't know. Could have been there, should have been there, but it wasn't. So, next fight up, Gabriel Bonfim, Angelusa. Gabriel Bonfim improving to 16-1. He goes the distance for the first time in his career and beats Angelusa. Wins all three rounds except on one judge's scorecard. Angelusa got a round, but every round, and Gabriel Bonfim looked better. Okay, round one, Angelusa landed three takedowns, 2 minutes of control time. You know, Gabriel Bonfim did outstrike him 23 significant strikes at 15, but Angelusa wasn't looking too shabby. Round two, Gabriel outstrikes him significantly, 35-21. Both men land a takedown. Round three, Gabriel on the feet, 43 significant strikes to 16. Couldn't be stopped. Gets the decision win over Angelusa. Good stuff. good stuff there. Angelou, no contest and a loss now in 2024. Not the best, but Gabriel Bonfim got finished for the first time, shockingly, in November. Coming back, getting a win here is exactly what he needed. By the way, 15 of his 16 wins by finish. Every young kid has to go the distance in one of them. And Gabriel, you know what, only 26. I do not doubt that he will be back. And I'm excited to see it in the men's welterweight division. Absolutely. And hey, Evan Elder won on the early prelims. I say we could do that fight. You know, you could even have Evan Elder take on Angelou. That's someone I wanted to bring up. Then we got to the fight of the night in the next fight, boys, and I'm so pissed I didn't pick him. I picked the hometown guy, Drew Dober, and hometown fighters necessarily weren't on fire, I'll say. I mean, this card was in Denver, and one of our Denver fighters lost, and that was Drew Dober. He got cut bad. He got cut bad, man. This was a pretty even fight. Drew Dober took round one. Gene Silva took round two. And just the cut was so bad. Drew Dober's eye, like, was completely split open. It was brutal. And sadly for Drew Dober, he's now on a 2-fight losing streak, 1-3 in his last 4. Not too pretty. But as for Gene Silva, out of the Fighting Nerds, I mean, Gene Silva's the future of the men's lightweight division. I mean, Gene Silva is so good. Gene Silva is so good. 11-fight win streak now. This is 11 KOs. This counts as a KO. Never been finished. 3-0 in the UFC, all in 2024. How about that? How about that? Gene Silva's 3-0 in 2024. I didn't even realize that. I'm sorry, Charles Johnson, but Gene Silva, 3-0, all finishes. Fight of the night. This could even be in fight of the year category. He's legit. He's legit. Let's give him a ranked opponent. You're not, I'm throwing him to the top, man. I mean, come on. And guess what? He was on the freaking Ariel Helwani show today, or he was on social media today saying, hey, I saw someone pulled out of their Damon's Contender Series fight in August. I want to step in for them. I mean, this dude wants to fight anyone, okay? Paddy Pimblett, Bobby Green, they're fighting. I think if Bobby Green win or loses, that could be a fight for him. Jalen Turner could be a fight. Loser of Dan Hooker and Juice Gamera could be a fight. Rafael Fiziev, I mean, I want to see Gene Silva fight everyone. Dude is so legit. I'll never pick against him. And it's funny because I predicted him to win in his last 2 fights. And I was kind of like, you know what? I'll give Drew Dober a decision win here. And no. Gene Silva proved he is a killer. Absolute killer. Good stuff there. Co-main event. I mean, just terrible. I mean, Santiago Ponzinibbio, 37. Muslim Sleekov, 40. They fought like they were. I had Santiago winning. I don't know what fight I was watching. Clearly, a Muslim Sliakov winning this fight by split decision. He outstruck Santiago in round 1, went 0-4 in takedowns. Round 2, Santiago outstruck him by 2, landed a takedown. Round 3, Santiago landed a takedown for 2 minutes of control time. Muslim outstruck him 15-11. Yeah, not much here. And honestly, I'd feed Gabriel Bonfim. I'd feed Muslim Sliakov to Gabriel Bonfim. But Muslim Sliakov snaps a 2-fight losing streak. 20-5 now, but he's 40. And as for Santiago Ponzinibbio, he was once promising, was once talking of title hopes. 2-fight losing streak, 1-4 in his last 5, 2-5 in his last 7. Yeah, Santiago Ponzinibbio. Maybe time to hang him up. I'm sorry to say it. But I don't really know what's next for these guys. Anyone in the welterweight division. Anyone. And with that, guys, we got to the main event. And, of course, we had to pick Tracy Cortez just for the memes, just because she could have won. But, no, Raul Namajunas gets a decision win. It was boring. You know what? I knew it would be boring. I hoped it wouldn't be. I hoped Tracy Cortez might be able to pull off an upset in round 5. And guess what? She almost did. I mean, Tracy Cortez won round 5, which I thought was pretty crazy. But 48-47, 249-46, that's the decision win for Rose Thug Rose. Namajunas, she was the favorite. Panned out, 14-6 now, 2-fight win streak, 2-0 now in 2024. She's fought 10 rounds in 2024. That's crazy, absolutely crazy to me. Landed a knockdown in round 1, which is pretty shocking. You know what? Some people are throwing out 10-8s. I saw that was pretty weird. 26 significant strikes to 12. She took that round. Round 2 outstruck her 26-11 significantly. Both women landed a takedown. Round 3, Rose went to the grappling 2-of-2 for around 4 minutes of control time. Tracy Cortez only landed 2 significant strikes. She came alive in round 4, though. 12 significant strikes to 11. Round 5, 36 total strikes to 30. Rose landed a takedown, you know what, 52 seconds of control time. And that was that. Tracy Cortez's 11-fight win streak is snapped. Rose, 96 significant strikes to 58. 5-5 on takedowns. 119 total strikes to 85. Tracy went 2-5 on takedowns. So, yeah. There's that. There is that. Rose was talking about trying to become a double champion. Look, I would love to see Rose Namajunas fight anyone above her, because I'm not freaking picking her to win, okay? Man, if you're already beat her, Erin Blanchfield beats her, Alexa Grasso beats her, Valentina Shevchenko really beats her, Macy Barber would have beaten her. Just so boring. Just so, so boring. I mean, let's just do her versus Jessica Andrade for the memes, all right? Unless we're going to rebook the Macy Barber fight, but no entertainment in this one whatsoever. I won't even sugarcoat it. It was boring, okay? I went to bed instead of watching this because I knew it would be boring. And Tracy Cortez wearing fake eyelashes to the ring. Come on. What are you doing, girl? What are you doing? Go back to the internet. Come on. But, yeah, that'll do it for this episode, boys. I mean, UFC Denver, it's about as good as we expected. It is about as good as we expected. I can't even lie. Well, what should I expect? What should I expect? But 169 correct picks on the year, 111 incorrect picks, which is unfortunate. But hey, plus 58. So if you tail us for betting, you'd be up. I can't bet. You know what? I live in Minnesota. We aren't allowed to bet. But this was a fun episode, introducing some new segments, going over some new things. Definitely working on growing this podcast. It's hard for me having a marketing major. I don't market this enough, but that's on me, just because, you know, I'm kind of happy just doing this whenever I want here and there. But good stuff. Good stuff. We'll be back with UFC Vegas 94 predictions on the next episode. Of course, new surprise things on what else other than the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'll catch you all next time. Have an amazing day.